Blog Talk Radio.
From deepest, darkest Africa, across the polar ice cap, spanning the jungles of South America, without a compass, without a map, Blog Talk Radio and Wildlife Educational Services presents Larry Batson's Wild World. Discover the wonders of the natural world with nationally known wildlife educator Larry Batson as we visit his wild world.
Hello, everyone, from the remote jungles of Clinton Falls, Indiana, and the shadows of the Canadian Rockies. This is Larry Batson, and welcome to My Wild World. Hello, everyone. I know we have a fantastic audience tonight. We're still buzzing about last week. And this is all made possible by Blog Talk Radio, Wildlife Educational Services, and my co-producer, the expertise of Mr. Eric Altman. How you doing, Eric?
What's happening, Larry? How are you?
I'm doing great. Go ahead. We had a fantastic show last week with John Green and Bob Gimlin. And since then, John Green has put together, has opened, this is 10 years in the making, his brand new website with all the data that he has recorded in probably close to 45 years of Sasquatch research. And to reach that data, SasquatchDatabase.com. So you want to be sure and check it out if you're interested in that. We do a little bit of everything. In fact, next week we have something very exciting. For all you Survivor fans, we're going to have the America's favorite survivor, the number one survivor, everyone's favorite, Rupert, will be on Larry Batson's Wild World next week, 11 o'clock. So be ready for that one. It should be wild. We're going to find all the latest about Survivor. I talked to him just last week, and he still watches the show. He keeps up to date on it. We're going to hear all the inside stuff. So if you are a Survivor fan, have those questions ready because we'll definitely open up the phone lines and you'll have a chance to talk to America's favorite Survivor, Rupert. That's next week right here on Larry Batson's Wild World. We've got a fantastic show tonight. We're going to stick with the Sasquatch subject, Bigfoot. And we have with us a gentleman that I've been talking with now for close to 2 years. In fact, I can still remember that email that I received just about 2 years ago. And I was looking for it earlier, and dummy me has deleted it. But in his own words, he says, I have some things I want to tell you, but I don't want Monster Quest at my at my house. And I can totally understand that. And in the last 2 years, we've been keeping in touch, and I'm going to tell you, folks, I've said this all week, everyone I've talked to and all the promotions that we've done for the show, that this may be one of the best eyewitnesses that I've ever talked to. From the wilds of the state of Washington, I consider a good friend now. Tonight he's known as the Northwest Trapper. Let's give him a nice welcome. How you doing, buddy?
I'm doing fine, Larry.
Well, it's great to hear from you. We've got a pretty good connection right now. We know with those mountain winds and everything that goes on in that part of the country that hopefully we won't lose you tonight, but we've got a lot to talk about.
Yeah, we're here before morning, and there's a big buck coming in, so we hope the lines are clear for everyone tonight.
Well, we're going to hope so, too. We're going to start the very beginning. And I'm going to let you start it off here with the, I can still remember the first email. You sent me photographs of these fantastic tracks in the snow that were, and I'm looking at that email that you said they were 23 and a half inches long and were 9 inches deep in the snow, and they had a, between the tracks, it was 8 feet. And I want to tell you, sir, when I first saw those tracks, when that first popped up on my computer monitor, every hair on the back of my neck stood straight up. Those are fantastic. Can you tell us a little bit about those?
Those are the best tracks I've ever seen myself. I was heading over to heaven, which we do every weekend, under weather permitting, Western Washington over to Eastern Washington. Those particular tracks, I wouldn't have seen them. We had to slow down because it's about 6 or 8 drops in road. So when we slowed down, I noticed these tracks 30 to 40 yards away up snow. And you know, right? And so this is so we went down on over a mile. I told my buddy, I said, "Hey, what's do here and go check each track." So we did. That's when we discovered each. We couldn't believe myself. Those are some of the biggest tracks, freshest, and the dryness that's between the tracks was incredible.
Try to change the location of your phone. We're having trouble hearing you.
You're having trouble hearing?
Now that's good. Yeah, you were going in and out on us.
Oh, I'm sorry.
That's quite all right, man.
Must be the atmosphere up here. I don't know.
Must
anyway, we measured the tracks and took pictures. We even come back a week later and did it again. Up in that cold climate, the tracks didn't change much within a week. But there's also a second set of tracks that you didn't see. Those were about 50 yards away. Those were only 16-inch tracks and only about 4 foot between them. And they joined each other down by the river about 75 yards away from the road we were on and crossed up into some very treacherous-looking territory. Straight-up cliffs with snow and ice on them, something no man could go up. Those were impressive tracks.
They were, even in the photographs. Even not being there and seeing them in person, they were very, very impressive. Like I said, when those first appeared on my computer monitor, it was chilling, just chilling. Let's start at the very
beginning.
Go ahead.
Everyone I've sent those tracks to, the pictures of, just some close friends of mine, they say they're the best they've ever seen also.
I would totally agree. Let's start at the very beginning when you first had your first experiences, your first encounters with the Sasquatch there in Washington.
Larry, let's go back 32 years.
All right.
Let's go back when Washington State wasn't as crowded and populated as it is now. We were down on the coastal mountain range of Washington State. Within 10 miles of the Pacific Ocean in that area. We were elk hunting, and we had hiked into this one location the day before. The elk sign in there was tremendous. It was totally old-growth timber, dark, even in the light of day. The pine needles were like 2 feet thick. You could walk on them without making a sound. So we got in there, and we seen the sign. We said, okay, that was the day before the season started. Okay, we'll be back here tomorrow. So the next morning found us in that old growth set of timber. We're sneaking along, and we got to smell an elk all around us. I said, okay, let's wait right here until it gets daylight. So we were in the middle of a herd of elk when the daylight come. Well, we didn't get a shot. All the bulls jumped up with the cows and ran off. So, well, okay, they'll be bedded back here in the morning. So we messed around that day, found an old trapper's cabin at the a fork of the river there. So we waited in there till dark 30 there, till it got dark. The elk never showed up. So we still had about 3 miles of hiking left to get out of that old timber. And it was dark. So we decided we'll go down beside the river. That way we'll get more daylight because get a little bit out of the old growth timber. So we were hiking along the trail in the old growth down by the river there. There was a big log that had washed out, leaning on a 45-degree angle over the river. The game trail I was following went right underneath this log. So as I went underneath this log and come up on the blind side of this tree that was leaning out, I come face to face with Sasquatch. We're talking 4 feet. I'm looking him right in the eye. And it was something your brain couldn't really comprehend at the time. I had heard about him, but seeing one for the first time was incredible.
What did you see?
What did I see? I see the creature. The way you was at least, it was between 7 and 8 feet tall. It was massive. The body on this creature was, I would say, between 600 to 800 pounds, guessing. Hairy. But what caught my attention most was the eyes. The eyes were fire red, and they were at least a foot apart. So me and my buddy both, we stood there and watched this thing, just at 5 to 6 feet. We had our gun on him, but we were hunting muzzleloader, black powder, and you only have one shot. And there's no way I would even attempt to shoot this thing because I know one shot could never kill something like that. So it was like a brief, the time span there, 30 seconds, 1 minute, 2 minutes, I don't know. I can't remember that. But this thing just looked at us, slowly turned, keeping its eyes on us, and disappeared into the old growth timber. That was the way we had to get out of the woods at night. We had to follow that trail into the old growth timber. And it was a spooky situation.
What did the face look like?
The face?
Yes.
More human than animal. It had a beard, it had long hair, it had a wide nose, it had a high forehead. How high, I couldn't tell. The crown of the head, I couldn't tell because it was dark. It was that dark.
Was it dark-skinned or light-skinned?
You know, Larry, it was so dark, I couldn't really tell. It could have been red. It could have been dark. I couldn't tell.
Okay.
Because it was that dark. But the hair hanging off its arms looked like a huge gorilla. Like an orangutan hair hanging off its arms. But the trunk, the legs, were tight-knit hair. The thighs, like tree trunks. I didn't get a chance to look at the feet. I'm sorry.
Did the saw went into the timber, and that's the route that you guys had to take to get out of there.
Right. We never heard a sound. We never heard another peep the whole night, which is kind of odd because there's nice sounds in the woods. But we, like I say, we had about 2.5-3 miles to go in the dark timber before we broke out and got into my truck. And then we both started to second guess ourselves about what we had seen, actually. Once you see something like that, you think, okay, is this really so? Did our minds play tricks on us? That kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And we both knew what we'd seen. We still do to this day. And actually, that was only my first sighting. Since then, I've had 3 more. So that was a good breaking in point, because the next sighting I had, I knew exactly what it was. And it didn't alarm me as bad. And I knew more what to expect.
Tell us about that one.
Well, we had, let's see, this was only back about 4 years ago. We were involved with a research group here at the base of Mount Rainier in Washington State. Every weekend for the past 2.5-3 years, there was always someone at our campsite on the weekends. Friday night, Saturday night. The reason that we were drawn to this area, a lady had stopped and let her dog go potty, and she had just walked off the side of the road on this logging road and let the dog go potty and seen this Sasquatch looking at her from behind the tree. So she really got upset. She called the sheriff. The word got out. We were contacted to come in and do a research study on this project. Also, there was a pig farmer there that was in the area, and he was always missing a lot of pigs. There was also a couple of farmers there that had trouble with these things were coming up when looking inside their house. And their wives and children were so scared, they moved back to town. So when we went out there, we discovered that after some time of getting to be known by these things, these creatures, I think it was by our smell, and it was because we never carried a gun, and we would always leave food, that they'd come to know us, and they trusted us. If an outsider come in with a strange smell, there would be no activity during the night. So after a time, actually, I just have my knee operated on. So I couldn't travel around like I used to. I was sitting on a stump one day. This was on some Weyerhaeuser property there, and we had to hike in like maybe a quarter of a mile into our base camp there as far as you could drive. I was sitting on a stump one day, and I happened to look up, and I seen two. I seen an older one that was almost white. And I seen a juvenile, which was under 6 foot with it, walk out of a patch of timber, walk down the logging road toward me. And with about 100 yards, they noticed I was sitting on the stump, and they dove into the brush. And our party, there was about 6 or 8 of us there that had numerous sightings yes, my brother Wood here, had numerous sightings. We found 18-inch tracks in a huge anthill that these things would come in and try to feed on. This is the area that I will tell you something. I've never experienced anything like this before in my life. One day, me and Chris, Saturday afternoon, 5:30 in the afternoon, still bright, sunshiny day, we hiked into camp. Chris says, well, I'm going to go down and check the anthill, see if there's any more tracks down that way. Okay. I said, I'm going to sit here in camp and just get ready for tonight, you know. So when I walked into camp, we had left an old picnic table down there, and it was standing up on its end. So, well, that's pretty strange. So I set the picnic table down, you know, and previously I had found where these guys had been feeding. They have their own, what I call, boneyard. That's
boneyard.
Where they feed. Boneyard.
In other words,
that's where
animal.
They... Pardon?
In other words, animals they've killed, they take to this one particular spot?
Yes. This is the skeletons of the carcasses they have eaten. And it contained sheep, pigs, dogs, cats, coyotes, numerous carcasses in there. So I was trying to, I thought, okay, I know where that's at, and I want to find a new trail into that area. So I thought, okay, I'm gonna head in this northeast direction out of camp and see if I can cut that trail where they're moving back and forth between their feeding area. Well, I wear hearing aids, and I left them in my backpack in camp. I'd only got out of the camp maybe 40 yards, and I started hearing something, more or less feeling something. And I thought, well, shoot, I'll go back and I'll get my hearing aids. So I went back to the camp, and I got my hearing aids, and I put my hearing aid in the end, and the first thing I heard was this... the sound that this Sasquatch was making. And it wasn't scary. It was like almost like a pleading sound.
A pleading sound?
Pleading, yes. Mournful, you might say. So I didn't know what to do. I mean, you know, here I am. This has never happened to me before. So I try to mimic the sound that I'm hearing back. So I'm starting this. We're getting this little conversation thing going back and forth. It's doing its little mumbo jumbo. I'm trying to give it back to it. We're doing this 3 or 4 times. Suddenly I heard this thing get up and move 90 degrees on me, come in to about 40 yards. So I'm thinking, okay, I'm going to see this thing really soon. It was that close. But it was so thick. And I really felt like I was naked under machine gun fire. And I got down and I laid down in the grass because I knew this thing had to see me and I could not see it. So we continued. It happened again. It made the noise it was making. I tried to make it back. This happened about twice more. All of a sudden, there was a young one behind me. Yelled back out. And this was more like a chimpanzee sound.
Mm-hmm.
Like a yin-yin-yin type thing. See if that happens. What I was trying to communicate with let off a very loud howl, growl, type sound, and then there was nothing else all afternoon. We had no activity that night. So somehow I had gotten between, I'm thinking, a mother and a juvenile.
And you didn't see either one of them at that moment?
Never seen either one of them, no. No. But it was so close, it was just, it would make every hair on your head stand straight up.
Had to be chilling. Had to be chilling.
The third sighting I had, Larry?
Yes.
Was in eastern Washington, down by the Columbian River. Very far north, almost to the Canadian border. Some friends of mine had camped on, well, they have property there. And we had been over having dinner with them. We were on a hunting trip, early muzzleloader deer or something like that. And we even had a room in town. So we had left their property and was heading back across the bridge, the river there. And this Sasquatch walked right out in front of us. Never looked at our Jeep. Made one beeline right across the road, right down to the Columbia River to get water. Had to be. We went up, turned the lights on the Jeep, tried to see it. We couldn't do it. It's already made it down to the river. That was the third time.
Did it when it moved, Trapper? Very quickly.
Yes.
Little effort. Very quickly with little effort.
Yes. Across the road in two strides, looked to be about 8 to 9 feet high, fully hair covered. We didn't see eyes shine because it never even was in Jeep. In that intent on a thing to step across this road, and that was it. There was no turning that one sideways. No. He had intent. So.
Now your cabin.
We've had.
Go ahead.
All the cabins.
We're going to get into your cabin after. We're going to take on a break here in a couple minutes, but.
Okay.
And you've got your friend Grizz there as well.
Yeah.
Who has an amazing story that he's going to relate to us. This is going to be exciting. Already, Trapper, you've. I told folks all week, this man is a wealth of knowledge. Do you realize there's people that have, well, John Green. He's trekked all over the mountains of Northern California, Oregon, and Washington and never had a chance to even get a glimpse of one. And you've been lucky enough not only to have three sightings, some people say that would not be lucky, but also,
Larry, you know what I have to say about that?
What's that?
I say you have to live in an area that has a population of these Sasquatch. And you have to be in the right spot at the right time.
Mm-hmm.
But it also helps to recognize signs around you, tracks, limb breakage. Sorry to say, but piles of dung, that kind of thing. There's subtle hints that let you get here in the area.
Well, we're going to hear all about those subtle hints. We're going to be back in just a few minutes. We've got a few PSAs we're going to play. Folks, this is Larry Batson. You're listening to My Wild World. We're with the Northwest Trapper from the state of Washington. We'll be back in just a few, and you're listening to Larry Batson's Wild World on Blog Talk Radio.
Larry?
Yes.
Before we go to break, can you guys carry on for a few minutes? The switchboard is frozen up on me here. Thanks for
talking
about tonight. And once we do get up, I'll give you a quick shout-out to go to break. But a quick question from the chat room you guys can discuss. Bill Green would like to know, is there any current sightings or footprint discoveries being investigated in that area?
Trapper?
Can you say that again?
Bill Green from the chat room would like to know if there are any current sightings or footprint discoveries that are currently being investigated in your area.
Yes. In my immediate area, there's been, last year a guy got a cell phone picture of a Sasquatch. I think it's probably on the BFRO website. There's been, several sightings right around our location here in Western Washington. And I'm waiting on more. This is the time of year they really come in because the elk hunters are out in the woods and they're seeing a lot of stuff. We get a lot of reports. What else? Any other questions?
That's all I have for right now. Unfortunately, Blog Talk, the website must have locked up on us here because I can't get access to the switchboard nor the chat room. So if you have to talking, go right ahead, and once I get things back up again, I'll let you know.
Well, we really don't need a break because Trapper has so much to tell us this evening. We really probably shouldn't break. This is like last week. Trapper, let's move to the your vacation mecca, your cabin.
The cabin,
absolutely.
The cabin. I bought this property 4 years ago. Spent 4 years building about a 1,200 square foot cabin up there. Well, phase one was a 10 by 24 cabin. My wood heater ran me out. It was so hot, I had to build something bigger. During the time when I first moved over, the first winter, we go over every weekend during the winter, rain or shine. If we can get across the pass is open, we're at the cabin. Let me think. The first incident at the cabin was in January of 2006. It takes us about 7 hours to drive to the cabin in good weather. So this is, we got to the cabin probably about midnight or 1 o'clock in the morning on a weekend in January 2006. Probably had to stay up an hour to get the wood stove going, get it warm enough to go to sleep. Just lay down in bed, just trying to get warm, go to sleep. Smack. Something hit the side of our cabin, right where my head was. It sounded like it was coming through the cabin. Of course, I sat straight up in bed. And my buddy was there. I said, "Did you hear that?" And I said, he said, "Yes." I said, "You want to go out and see what that was?" And he said, "No." So we didn't. Let's see. Since then, I've been building, remodeling up there. One incident in the spring of 2007, in April. I'm rendezvousing over there. My brother comes over from Montana. He beats me to the cabin. We pull in, 8 o'clock in the morning, something like that. He says, "What are you doing with the water barrel up there on the hill?" I said, "What are you talking about?" And I look up, and here's my black 50-gallon barrel of water, setting about 150 yards uphill behind the cabin.
With water in it.
I said, well, it had water in it, yes, sir. It was full of water. Had to weigh 400 pounds. So I thought, well, okay, I was pulling the trailer with my quad. I said, okay, I'll get it in a minute. I unloaded the quad, I rode up the hill, parked the quad, got off. I stepped, and I looked, and here's a 5-gallon bucket behind a bush. I'm thinking, well, what's that doing up here? And I didn't put two and two together at that time, because I was more amazed at what my water barrel was doing up there on the hill. So I'm thinking, wow, what brought this water barrel up here on the hill full of water? There's no way anyone could have carried this thing up here. So I'm looking around for any kind of sign of muddy prints, hair, anything around the water barrel. And there's not really much. It's a dirty barrel. And then I walk a little farther and I look, and here is a bag of Cabela's deer grub, shredded under a big ponderosa pine tree. And then I remembered, okay, that's what I had in that 5-gallon bucket underneath a table off of the backside of my cabin. And whatever had shredded this bag of Cabela's deer grub, eat it every morsel. And that was a 50-pound bag. So I thought, okay, I'm going to start and see if I can cut some tracks on this. So I started out small, and I walked around about 10 yards away. Then I went out to about 30 yards away. Then I went out to about 50 yards away. And on that 50-yard swing, I come underneath this other big tree, and here is one of the biggest piles of dung you've ever seen in your life. And it's just exactly the same kind I found down in Northern California. And, I mean, shape, texture, we won't go into really that much, but it was the same type of scat that we know that is related to the Sasquatch. That was very strange, right? That was one incident. Another incident I would say is I had a big I think it must have been a hickory tree that I wanted to save in my landscaping there by the cabin. So the next weekend, we pulled in there at 1 o'clock in the morning. We're driving up the driveway, and the headlights hit this tree, and I'm looking and I'm going, what the hell happened to that tree? And my specimen tree I was going to use there for my landscape was almost 8 inches in diameter. This thing had been pushed over at a 90-degree angle. It was about 14 feet high. The top was laying on the ground. The sides were, I'm going to say, imploded, where you can see the muscle of the tree expand from the joint. The roots were still on the ground.
Are you trying to say it was like it was bent in two?
Pardon me?
Are you trying to say it was bent in two? Or was it just pushed over?
It was just pushed over. It looked like something had taken it and just broke it into a bend. So, that kind of pissed me off. I was like, I like that tree. Well, later that afternoon, We were doing some work, and my buddy Grizz went outside and discovered a 16-inch track in my yard, which was directly in line with that tree and only about 8 feet away. So I said, okay, now we know.
One of our conversations, Trap, you said that if you do not leave the... Now, you correct me if I'm wrong, maybe because I'm over 50 to memory, but that if you don't keep that those horse troughs that you have or those troughs with food, that they'll actually come up and tell you to fill it, that they'll beat on the cabin and scream at you.
That's correct. And that leads us up to the story I want my buddy to take.
Okay.
About our bait pile. We're going to call him Grizz.
Okay.
And he's ready to talk to you.
Fantastic.
And you can ask him anything you want.
I will.
He's like me. We don't lie. We got pictures of everything.
I totally believe you.
Here's Grizz.
Okay.
Hello?
Grizz.
Yeah, good evening.
Larry Batson, nice to meet you, sir.
Yeah, nice talking to you.
You got a good friend?
Yeah, we've been buddies a long time. We've had a lot of these experiences together. The first two sightings, we were standing next to each other when we seen Bigfoot, and
Go ahead.
What was going through my mind? I thought,
yes.
when we first saw the first one some 30 years ago, we came face to face with it. It looked like a gorilla to me, and when we first saw it, I thought it might have been a bear. And I had a bear tag in my pocket, so I brought my gun up on it, and I had it dead center in the chest, and I knew it was no bear then when it looked at me, and it had an ape-looking face to it. And it's like it knew that I wasn't going to shoot at that point, and it stood there staring at us for a while, and with these red eyes, and it just turned, took a couple steps, and was out of sight into the timber, you know, and we had to go that direction for miles. And but the worst sighting I've had was, we were talking about the cabin. One weekend, Dan and I were over there for opening muzzleloader deer season, and we hunted the first couple of days, and Dan had to come back to go to work. So I drove him back, and I had the week off, so I turned around and went back to the cabin by myself. But anyway, it started out like that Saturday evening when Dan was with me. We were getting supper cooking or something at the cabin. I happened to go out back, and towards the feeder we have up on the hill, I shined my flashlight and saw a pair of red eyes staring at me off in the distance. And it looked to me like about 3 or 4 foot tall, whatever it was. And I just couldn't make out much of it, but the red eyes with the little flashlight I had. So I walked back in and got Dan in the cabin and showed him, and we watched it up on the hillside for a while, and it just kind of went off in the distance, and we didn't think much about it then. And anyway, the next day I drove Dan all the way back home, and I went back to the cabin by myself, and that very same day I managed to get my deer, tagged it out, and had it laying across the back of a Jeep in camp at the cabin that evening, and got back, and I was getting supper cooking in the cabin, and walked outside, and it just happened to shine my little flashlight up by the feeder, and here was this set of red eyes looking at me, and it'd stare at me, and then it'd hide behind a tree, and I'd just see one red eye, and then it'd peek out, and I'd see both red eyes, and it kept getting closer and closer to me, and it was starting to make me nervous because I was up in the wilderness all by myself. The cabin's really remote, way off the power grid, and I was starting to get nervous. So I grabbed my .22 and it was playing peekaboo behind this tree from me. And when I went behind the tree, I shot into the tree with my .22, and I just to scare it away. And all was quiet then, and, you know, I didn't see no more red eyes, and I thought, well, good, I'll go back in the cabin, eat supper, and get some sleep. You know, I was going to head home the next day with my deer. And a little while later, I had to relieve myself and walked out behind the Jeep, check on the deer, and was taking a leak. I shined the flashlight up by the feeder, and there was two sets of red eyes. The one that looked like to be 3 or 4 foot tall, and one twice that tall. And boy, they had me nervous then. I got in the cabin and watched through the window for a while. They kept getting closer and closer. And at the time, we had a phone at the cabin, and I even called my dad to see what he thought they were. And he didn't know, you know, and he believes in Bigfoot too, and that's the only thing we could come up with. And I called Dan back at home, told him what was happening. There were these two sets of red eyes were milling around out there, and they kept getting closer to the cabin, and I was getting nervous. I had that .22, I was going to scare them away again, and the one big one came out from behind the tree, and I shot, and I thought I hit it in the face somehow. And I could hear some commotion going on, and the smaller red set of red eyes ran over to it, and I could hear some scuffling, and couldn't see anything with my little flashlight. But that's when I got nervous. I locked everything up at the cabin, loaded every gun I had, and sat up all night, you know, and had just the glow of a light going, and wondering if they were going to tear the place apart and get me. And but thankfully, it was a quiet night, and as soon as it got daylight, I went looking around up there, and I couldn't find any blood or anything like that, or any tracks or anything, because it was, the ground is pretty much frozen up there this time of the year. But it was one scary night, I tell you.
I'll bet. So how tall was the bigger one, do you think?
They were within probably 35 or 40 yards from me at the closest.
Yeah.
And they started out, when I first noticed them, they were probably 100 yards out. And they just kept working their way closer, and they'd hide behind the tree and play peekaboo with me, you know.
Uh-huh.
And but after I scared that young one off, it's like... Well, I'm going to go get Mama, you know, and I was expecting her to be pissed, and I think she was. You know, I scared her young enough by shooting at it. And, but we've had some weird experiences up there. We found some big tracks, and we've heard them mumbling. They've got their own kind of dialect. If you hear it, it makes the hair on the back of your neck stand up. I'd say they were probably a matter of 20 feet behind me one night, and I could hear this mumbling that just sent chills up you. And I was sitting in a chair when I first heard them mumbling, two of them back and forth, and when I stood up, one of them just goes, whoo, and they shut up, you know. And I never did get to see them, but they were in close to me. But we've had some odd experiences. In my opinion, they definitely do exist. I don't know what they are, you know, what's fashionable, Bigfoot, Sasquatch, Ape Man. That's what I describe it as, an unexplored northwestern ape of some kind.
So
they look
so
more...
Go ahead.
What's that?
You
no, go ahead.
The face is more ape-like than human-like?
Yeah, I would. That's what I would say.
Okay.
That's what it looked to me, anyway.
Right.
But it's something you don't forget.
Well,
and they smell. They smell, too. There's been a couple times at night when we've been out investigating where they come in close and you can smell them. It smells like an outhouse, you know. Sometimes at the cabin, if they come snooping around the cabin, they smell so bad it's woken a trapper up in the middle of the night of sleep, and they smell so bad. But it smells like a rancid outhouse when they get in close. I mean, they're smelly. probably from all that hair. But but that's something you don't forget. I've seen when they take off rock and hair hanging down from their arms, all scraggly and kind of matted together. And the one time that gets me was at the cab. We were at the cabin again, and Trapper's brother was visiting from Montana. And I got up early one morning, beat him outside to take a leak, and it was still early. It wasn't even daylight yet. I was standing there taking a leak, and I seen kind of a black image on the hillside right within, oh, maybe 20 feet of me on the hill. And this black image started moving, and then all of a sudden it just took off running. Made a lot of noise, and I didn't know at the time it was air or if it was Bigfoot or what. But I come back in the cab and went to sleep, didn't tell anybody my close encounter. And Trapper's brother got up to go to the outhouse. About an hour later, I heard him get up, and he goes out to the outhouse, and he was just sat down to do his business, and he hears these heavy footfalls come up the driveway, and I mean real heavy, something walking right towards him. And he said he was so scared he didn't even want to fart. And kept getting louder and louder. And he said whatever it was, he could hear it breathing. It was walking around the outhouse. And he was just scared shitless. And it turned and he could hear it walking away from him. And when it did that, he just made a beeline into the cabin, woke us all up, tell us what was going on. And, you know, it got daylight and everything kind of calmed down. And Dan and I ran to town. We had to get some coffee or something, and we were just going to be right back, you know. And we ran to the closest town there, got coffee, come back, and his brother was nowhere to be found. It scared him so bad, he packed up and headed back home to Montana. It scared the heck out of him.
Well, they have reports in Montana, too.
Yeah, they do.
So that's not...
Yeah, but he didn't want to get that close of an encounter. I don't think I've seen him since.
Oh, really? Oh, really?
Yeah.
Wow.
But, yeah, we've taken people over there, and the happening scare some people. But Dan and I both, we've been outdoors people since, well, my dad started taking me in the woods when I was like 5 or 6 years old.
Wow.
And, my dad and uncles always took me with them hunting, and they never hunted with a gun. They always bow hunted. And, shit, I'm 59, so I've been hunting over 50 years and been in the woods over 50 years already.
Wow.
So, and I can actually say I've positively seen two, and then the red eyes, I don't know what that was, but it could have been Bigfoot. I just don't know. I've never seen anything like that with red eyes that far apart. And some of the tracks we've been seeing are just unreal.
Well,
in fact,
we're
getting our gear ready right now. We're leaving tomorrow on a little weekend expedition up to the cabin. They're calling for fresh snow, and that's the best time to look for tracks.
Absolutely.
So we'll have our cameras with us and everything. So, and I got snow camo that Dan can't even see me when I put it on. So we'll keep you posted on that.
Oh, please do. Please do. Please do.
We sure will. It's been great talking to you, and I'll open you over to Dan real quick.
Thank you very much, Chris. It's great talking to you.
Okay, Larry.
You know, a while back we were talking, and I told you that I had a theory that there's someone somewhere that has that special place that they've worked their entire life for, that I believe that because they just don't want the exposure, they just don't want the attention, they don't want a bunch of people traipsing around this special place, that there's someone out there that has a better piece of film footage than the Patterson-Gimlin film. And you remember what you told me?
Larry, let's put it this way. I feel blessed that I've seen what I've seen, and I hope to see more. That's all I'm going to say.
I gotcha. All right.
One thing I will say, I am writing a book, and it will include all the pictures that we have. It'd be a good read, and I think people might find it interesting. If there's a publisher out there somewhere that would take a chance on publishing it, I hope they get in touch with you.
Well, I'm going to tell everyone that might want to get, if they contact me through my email address, then I can forward your email to them. And he can decide yay or nay whether he wants to correspond or not.
There we go.
There we go? Okay. My email is L Batson.
There you go.
L Batson, BATTSON, at peoplepc.com. Because as I said earlier in our broadcast, that when I first talked to Trapper, he told me that he wasn't interested in having a bunch of folks. Well, as I've always thought, that it would ruin everything. That with a lot of traffic, a lot of, it's been proven over the years, the building of suburbia has destroyed habitat for all wild animals, and the activity of humans destroys the habitat for animals. Including this, that you just don't want the exposure. But I know there's many, many, many folks out there right now that are interested in this subject, would probably just love to spend 5 minutes talking to you. I've been blessed because we've had some pretty long conversations. And I can still remember the first time we had a chance to chat. I couldn't write it down fast enough. I was thoroughly exhausted.
Hey, Aaron, before we leave here, I want to take a chance to thank some of my buddies across country.
All right.
If they may be listening.
Okay.
Wolf in Oklahoma. Dennis and Monty in Montana. Tall Head in North Carolina. Trevor in South Carolina. They've been an inspiration.
Fantastic. Well, I hope they are listening. I know we have a great audience tonight. And you've been a fantastic guest. I think you've lived up to all the things that I've told people all week and all the promotion that we've done. And Trapper, I want to tell you right now, buddy, I consider you a good friend, and I really, really appreciate you coming on tonight's program.
Larry, not a problem. Enjoyed it immensely. Look forward to it, doing it again.
Well, if you don't mind, we're going to try this again in the next few weeks. We'll announce it so everyone can have a chance to tune in. As I mentioned earlier, Rupert, America's Favorite Survivor, is going to be on next week. We're going to talk about his adventures in the filming of the fantastic television program, widely watched television program, Survivor. Also, I want to mention once again John Green's brand new website, SasquatchDatabase.com, has tens of thousands of reports that he's accumulated for close to 50 years of Sasquatch research. So you want to be sure and check that out. I want to thank Eric Altman for being so kind to run the controls back there in Pennsylvania. And I want to thank my wife tonight for the wonderful tuna fish casserole I enjoyed right before the broadcast. We'll be back next week, folks. Thanks, Trapper. Thanks, Grizz.
Thank you.
You're listening to Blog Talk Radio. This is Larry Batson, and you visited my wild world. Have a great week, everybody. We'll talk to you next Thursday at 11 o'clock Eastern Standard Time with America's favorite survivor, Rupert. And we'll talk to you then. Thanks a lot.
Thanks for listening this week to Larry Batson's Wild World. sure to join us again next week at 10 p.m. for more of the latest outdoor and wildlife news and information, along with great tales from your host, world-renowned wildlife expert, Mr. Larry Batson. Tune in again next week for another exciting edition of Larry Batson's Wild World. Larry Batson's Wild World is a Batson Wildlife Educational Services production in association with Blog Talk Radio.